How will the world end? I love it. He says, can what has no beginning really end? The world will end in an illusion as the world began in an illusion. Yet will the world's ending be an illusion of mercy, the illusion of forgiveness, complete, excluding no one, limitless in gentleness, will cover the world, hiding all evil, concealing all sin, and ending guilt forever. So ends the world that guilt has made. I find that when I read the Course, and every time I get to page 36 in the teacher's manual, every time I get to an it, I try to remember to say what the it is. And I found when I read it the first time, it made it a lot easier. Because I remember when I first went through it, I got confused with all the its. Right. Like, what it is it? Then I get disgusted and go, all it. Yeah, it's like I go, it. What it is it? You know, which, you know. So he says, so ends the world of guilt. So ends the world that guilt had made. For now the world that guilt has made has no purpose and is gone. The father of illusions is the belief that illusions have a purpose and that illusions serve a need or gratify a want. Perceived as purposeless, illusions are no longer seen. Their uselessness is recognized and illusions are gone. How but in this way are all illusions ended? When it's talking about illusions, he says that that's a false. It's false ideas that we want to be true so bad that we try to make them true. Because he gave a definition a couple of sections back. He says the illusions have been brought to the truth, and the truth saw the illusions not. The truth merely overlooked the meaningless. Until forgiveness is complete, the world does have a purpose. The world becomes the home in which forgiveness is born, and where forgiveness grows and becomes stronger and more all-embracing. Here in the world is forgiveness nourished, for here forgiveness is needed. A gentle Savior, born where sin was made and guilt made real. Here is the gentle Savior's home, for here there is need of a gentle Savior indeed. The gentle Savior brings the ending of the world with him. It is the gentle Savior's call, God's teacher's answer, turning to the gentle Savior in silence to receive the gentle Savior's word. The world will end when all things in the world have been judged rightly by God's judgment. The world will end with the benediction of holiness, and another word for holiness is innocence, upon it. When not one thought of sin, which is the same as guilt, remains, the world is over. I love this sentence. The world will not be destroyed, nor attacked, nor even touched. The world will merely cease to seem to be. Certainly, the world ceasing to seem to be, or the world ending with the benediction of holiness upon it, seems to be a long, long while away. When not one thought of sin remains, appears to be a long-range goal indeed. But time stands still and waits on the goal of God's teachers. Not one thought of sin or guilt will remain the instant any one of you or me accepts atonement for himself. It's not easier to forgive one sin than to forgive them all. The illusion of orders of difficulty, believing that one thing is more difficult than another, is an obstacle you, the teacher of God, must learn to pass by and leave behind. One sin, that means one guilt, one illusion, one false idea, perfectly forgiven by one teacher of God can make salvation complete. I love this next one. Let's check this out. Can you understand this? What's the answer?
No.
If you ask most people, do you understand what you just heard? They'll say, no. Well, he just told you. So don't feel bad. It was right there in the book. Can you understand this? No. Guess what? It is meaningless. What I just said is meaningless to anyone here. Yet it is the final lesson in which unity is restored. It goes against all the thinking of the world, but so does heaven. And heaven is another term for reality. The world will end when the world's thought system has been completely reversed. Until the world's thought system has been completely reversed, bits and pieces of the world's thinking will still seem sensible. Until you completely change your mind, some of the thinking of the world will still make sense to you. The final lesson, which is forgiveness, which brings the ending of the world, which is false perception, cannot be grasped by those not yet prepared to leave the world and go beyond the world's tainted reach. What, then, is the function of the teacher of God in this concluding lesson? The teacher of God need merely learn how to approach the lesson, to be willing to go in the lesson's direction. You, which is us, need merely trust that if God's voice tells you it is a lesson you can learn, you can learn it. You do not judge the lesson or the course either as hard or easy. Your teacher points to the lesson, and you trust that your teacher will show you how to learn the lesson. Now it's going to describe how the world ends, which I think is great. The world will end in joy because the world is a place of sorrow. When joy has come, the purpose of the world has gone. The world will end in peace because the world is a place of war. When peace has come, what is the purpose of the world? The world will end in laughter because the world is a place of tears. Where there is laughter, who can longer weep? And only complete forgiveness brings all this to bless the world. In blessing, the world departs. But the world will not end as the world began. To turn hell into heaven is the function of God's teachers. But what God's teachers teach are lessons in which heaven, which is reality or love, is reflected. And now sit down in true humility and realize that all God would have you do, you can do. Do not be arrogant and say you cannot learn God's own curriculum. God's word says otherwise. God's will be done. It can't be otherwise. And be you thankful that it can't be otherwise. All right. Since sharing this since 1980, I've really had a chance to go through this a few times. And please take advantage of that in terms of a lot of the stuff in the course that's mystifying. I could really just shortcut you right through it and save you a lot of time. But the interesting thing about saving people time is that they have to trust you to do it. That's what I realize about saving time. It's like if you ask me the quickest way to get to Pete's, and you were thinking you need to go around the block, and I told you the quickest way to get to Pete's restaurant is to make a right and go straight up the street, you'd have to trust me in order to take advantage of the shortcut. Or you could go around the block and then realize that you could have gone straight up the street. You see what I'm saying? And that's the same way it is with the course. You know, it's like I could shortcut you But it might not necessarily make sense to you at the time I shortcut you. It would be like for instance, whenever you read something in the Course, and you go through a lot of fear and you go through a lot of disorientation, just be rest assured that it's your ego that's trying to interpret what you just read. That your ego is feeling threatened by an old definition that it has about that, or else the Course has hit some kind of an idol, some belief that you have that you're not ready to give up yet. And as soon as that happens, your mind goes into, I don't understand that. And I don't understand that, the Course says, it's the same as saying, I don't accept it. That's all it means. Like when the Course says something like, you are not a body. And the people say, well, I don't understand that. I know you definitely understand that. You understand intellectually, it's saying you are not a body. So to say that you don't understand that, now, I don't understand how that could be true. I don't accept that it's true. That's a whole different ball game. But you can't say, you don't understand, I am not a body. You know what I mean? It's like, and so that's the thing about the idols, as the Course calls it. You know, it's like, how will the world end? And the Course defines the world as a perception. That the world is a perception, and that the world that you live in is a world of your perception, and that the world of perception is a world of interpretation. He says perception is interpretation. So when you say, how will the world end, the Course says the world, when it says the world, it's talking about your false perception, okay? Then it's the same as saying, how will my false perceptions end? And so people say to me, well, then why didn't they just say that? Because then we would speed read over it, just like we do everything else, and not take a minute to ponder what it is that we just read. I really came to realize that it's written in crystal terminology, so that it'll jar us, that it gives definitions of all the terms, so you won't speed. Because if you speed read the Course, a person is usually totally blank. It's like you couldn't pay them to remember one thing that they actually read. Anybody who sits down and read it like a book and you say, now what did you just read? I defy that person to tell you three sentences that they just read. Because everybody who comes to the class know how to read. It's not, you know, anybody, you can get this to an 8-year-old child in the public school system, he'll read it. But to get the meaning of it, it wants you to stop for a minute. Jesus wants us to go within and wants us to really take the time to realize what's being said. It's usually also geared toward people who have religious, who are recovering Baptists, recovering Catholics, people who are recovering from some type of a negative experience around religion. One of the things I notice about the Course in Miracles, almost everybody that comes with the Course in Miracles at first, especially in this part of the country, hates the terminology. In the South, it's what makes people accept it quicker. I found that when teaching in the South, people love to hear Christ, and they love to hear Jesus, and they love to hear heaven. That actually made them feel like, okay, this book might not be quite for the devil. You know, up here, it's just the opposite reaction that I've noticed being up here for 7 years teaching. Most people don't want to hear the word God. They don't want to hear the word Christ. They don't want to hear any religious terminology whatsoever. And so it's harder to teach the Course, actually, up here than it was in the South. Because you're dealing with more resistance against the idea of God up here than you are. Because it's such more of an independent, I want to go beyond the past kind of consciousness up here. So what the Course does is it gives definitions of every word. So it's like I know how to do the English translation. And that's what I try to do. Like when it says, how will the world end? Well, how will false perception end? And then we go back through it. I don't care how far we get, because the Course says one idea will lead you to all truth. So really, if a person got one idea of the Course and then work with that idea, it would lead them into all truth. Like when it's, like the first paragraph when it says, you know, how can what has no beginning really have an end? The world will end in illusion because that's how it began. Yet, will the world's ending be an illusion of mercy? So if the world is a place that it looks like people generally don't have mercy, or it looks like people are judgmental, right? Well, then that's what the Course is saying. Well, when you start having mercy, then you've effectively ended the world. as you perceive the world. And he says the illusion of forgiveness. And he says, well, what is the illusion of forgiveness? It's when you've really forgiven, and the Course says forgiveness means correct perception, that forgiveness means to release, that to forgive means the correct interpretation. Its definition of forgiveness is not, I'm going to overlook what you really did to me, you no good son of a gun, because I am nicer than you. So forgiveness is not, I did something to you, and then you're going to make yourself forgive me for it. The Course's definition of forgiveness is, I am going to correctly perceive this situation, which for the average person would be, I'm going to see this as a call for love. I'm going to see this as a call for help. Like I was talking last week about a situation that I dealt with where I had an ego confrontation that got healed because I decided to forgive. And to forgive didn't mean that I was going to overlook what that person really did to me. Forgiving that person meant that I was willing to look at it as a call for love and as a call for help. And then when I looked at it as a call for love, and then I approached that person like something was really wrong, that really didn't have anything to do with me, to tell the truth, that's exactly what it was. It didn't have anything to do with me at all. It was a call for help. But I didn't get fooled by, at first I got fooled, but then wanting to go beyond being fooled because I didn't like the way it felt for me, then I realized that it didn't have nothing to do with me, which dug back to the lesson 5, which is, I'm never upset for the reason I think. I try to remember that whenever a person seems to be angry, upset, that whatever they're telling me that they're upset about, I try to remember that that is just the smoke screen for what they're really upset about. So the thing that people rattle off real quick that they're mad about, you can be pretty sure that ain't got nothing to do with what they're mad about. If they say, you know, I'm mad because my mama didn't tell me I cooked dinner real good, you're not mad because your mama didn't compliment you. You know, there's something deeper than that that's going on. Because that, if you think about it, that is not even important enough to rate this kind of anger that you are experiencing. It's something deeper going on. So when the Course says that you're going to have the illusion of forgiveness, and it says it's going to exclude no one, that is unlimited in its gentleness, and that it covers the world, hiding all evil, concealing all sin. In other words, you can tell when you've forgiven because the guilt is ended forever. When you read the Course, the Course reads as if it's giving you explanations constantly of everything it says. So when you read it, if you'll keep going when you don't understand something, then you'll eventually get to a sentence that you understand that clarifies everything that came before it. So how can you tell when you've really forgiven somebody? Well, if you've really forgiven the situation, you don't feel guilty about it anymore. It's just that simple. Then he goes, the father of illusions, I love this one. He says, in other words, the father of illusions means the thing that created the illusion or created the fear. Like if your mind goes, all right, what does it mean by illusion? Which is a big thing. Well, what does it mean by illusion? The Course says that everything it's talking about is either love or fear. That if you wanted to get past all of the terminology, just reduce everything to love or fear, and you'll see what it's talking about. It says what creates the illusion is the belief that they have a purpose, satisfy a need, or gratify a want. So what does that mean? That would mean that anything that you're going through in your life that you feel upset about or frightened about, it's serving some kind of a need that you have, and it's gratifying some kind of a want that you have. In other words, they call it in a lot of workshops, there's a payoff. There's a payoff in staying broke. There's a payoff in keeping that challenge in the relationship. There's a payoff in keeping yourself set. Whatever your situation is right now that it seems like you're not having peace about, that you haven't been able to change, the Course says it's serving some kind of purpose. Now, I can tell you what the Course says the purpose is, so, because it answers everything. So would you like to hear what the Course said the purpose is?
Yes.
Okay. The purpose that the Course says it serves is to keep you believing you're separate from God, keep you believing that you're a body, and helping you to lose sight of your spiritual identity. that the purpose of it is to get so caught up in that thing as being what gives you your peace that you forget that you're the one that creates your peace, that you're a powerful being, and that you're a loving being, and that you're a spiritual being. For instance, if this book is saying I'm this unlimited spiritual being, and I don't want to believe that, then I'm going to form relationships that constantly give me conflict, which seems to witness to the idea that I couldn't possibly be this loving being that this book is talking about, because look at all the stuff that I'm going through. So the purpose of an illusion is to keep you so caught up in the things of the world that you lose sight of your spiritual identity. That's the purpose of course. That's the purpose of every so-called problem, is to make you forget who you are. Now the ego is going to say something else. Your ego is going to say the purpose of the problem is to, you know, it's some kind of an ego human level. And then he says, now, so people ask then, they say, well, how do I get rid of the problem? How do I get rid of the illusion? And then it says it in the next sentence. If you can see what you're going through as purposeless, then it will disappear. In other words, when I get clear in my mind that there's no purpose in me having lack, there's no purpose in me having relationships that are not loving and supportive, there's no purpose in me not being happy. Like a lot of people go, well, you got to suffer in order to grow. But the minute you say stuff like that, the minute you go, no pain, no gain, then you are ordering up pain. The minute you say it can't be easy for me, you're ordering up something hard. People don't realize that every time you see a purpose in some painful situation, like when I hear people say, if someone tries to enter into a relationship with me and it's a personal relationship, and there's something about me that's a challenge for them, and then they go, well, I still want to be in this relationship together so we can grow. That's the most immediate red flag in the world. I never want to be in a relationship with another person in the rest of my life that wants to be in a relationship with me so that they can grow. Because that's just a distorted way of saying I cannot accept you as you are, and I'm trying to make myself deal with stuff with you that I really don't want to. In other words, I'm willing to make a sacrifice to be with you. And it always ends in some form of resentment. And it always ends in some form of separation. It's like, no. It's a different thing to say, I want to grow. And we are mutually in accord with that. And we love each other. And we just want to still see how much love we can express with each other. Oh, that's great. But to get with you because there's something about you that I really don't like, and I think spiritual growth is trying to get myself to like that about you, or to get you to change, I pass. Because we're gonna do that same dance that we've done in every other relationship with somebody who was always, we wish they were a little different. I'm not talking about compromising on you got one TV, and then you decide you watch your show one night, and they'll watch their show. That's not the level that the Course in Miracles is on, and that's when the Course gets confusing, when people want to bring it down to a mundane level, and then all of a sudden they get all disoriented. It's like, no, it's not about compromising, about watching TV. Yeah, of course you'll compromise if you got one TV. Okay, it's talking about, will you compromise about the idea that you deserve to be treated right? Will you be uncompromising about the idea that you do deserve love? So that's the level of not compromising the Course is talking about. Will you be uncompromising about wanting to live the truth, and you're going to live the truth no matter what? That's what the Course is saying, be uncompromising about, in my perception. Not working out day-to-day ego little illusions that everybody's trying. You know what I'm saying? That's not, it's not even talking about that level. Okay, everybody with me on that?
Can we talk a little bit more about forgiveness for a minute? Because I've been thinking about this quite a bit. And I really, what I wrote down that I agree with, that I see, is that, so you see the forgiveness as when you forgive, you correct your perception.
Mm-hmm.
You see the other person is calling for love.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times that I think that the forgiveness is that I need to correct my perception that they're not calling for love, but that I'm misinterpreting their, or I don't know, I had something happen with a credit card company yesterday, and they asked me for something that I kind of was annoyed about because it felt unnecessary. And that wasn't their call for love. I don't think they were calling for love, and they were asking for more information.
They were calling for, that was their call for love, if they were attacking you. See, they weren't attacking you by asking for information. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, okay. See, I didn't see it that way, because I just thought, oh, that my reaction was what I needed to forgive.
And everything is a call for love. That's the other thing. It's the call for love is always behind whatever the parents. Like the Course is saying, all of us want love. I might be working at a credit card company, but guess what? I want love.
Yeah.
I want a peaceful day. So yes, I am calling for love. But you're getting irritated with them. Mm-hmm. That was your call for love.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the Course says, and you were supposed to see yourself, he's supposed to ask the patient.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
that's what you did earlier, right. Yeah. So now I'm the one who needs the help. And so now I'm the one asking Spirit to give me another way to look at it. Okay.
And it's funny because I saw all that, but I never saw that they were calling for love.
Right.
Because I just thought they were doing their business, asking for what
right.
they needed. But I saw my reaction as, oh, yeah, I'm calling for love. I hung up and I stopped what I was doing, meditation, regrouped, changed my perception.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
I filled in what they needed me to fill in.
No, okay, but that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
It wasn't necessary, my reaction, because I was perceiving an attack when it wasn't an attack. I don't think it was.
Okay, that's the illusion. That's what it means when it says, you know, that the illusion was that you were being attacked when you really weren't being attacked.
It wasn't.
And you weren't. They were just doing what they do. Okay, so let's take it a step further. So then we would go, you're getting upset about it, served some kind of purpose in that moment, served some kind of need in that moment, and gratified some kind of a want. For some reason, in that moment, you wanted to be upset. See, then that's how you free yourself. Then you went, and then just the cool part. That's why I love when people ask questions. Then the cool part was, the very next moment, you decided you didn't want to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, and then as soon as you decided you didn't want to be upset, that idea then directed your action. It said, hang up the phone, go cool off, and then come back and try it again.
Yeah, I was doing a lesson. I'm on a different lesson than you guys. I'm on a lesson about releasing grievances.
That's right.
But grievances, and I've been doing these lessons about grievances blocking the light. I've read that before. Yeah, I've done that lesson before, but it's like I didn't quite get it. Every time I do them, I get them a little different.
And I'm willing to assure you that that's true 26 years later. Like people say to me, well, how can you still be reading the same book for 26 years? Either you're an extremely slow learner. Are you mentally retarded or what? You know.
I read that before.
Oh, it's really freaky when you go. What's really freaky is to go back to the book and see where not only you read it, you highlighted it.
Yeah.
And then you go, who highlighted that? Look at him. Somebody read that. It looked like my handwriting. You know, you be like freaking out. And
I tell you to read the teacher's manual again, because it's been about 10 years since I read it, and I've marked pieces where I never got that before, but this time when we just discussed it, I got, oh yeah, I see that different.
And it's like that's what I see myself as. My role is, I call myself an official reminder. I don't see myself as teaching people something they don't know. I see myself as reminding people of what they already know and don't want to forget. Because if I'm in this room and we're telling each other that we're innocent and that we're powerful beings, and I go out into the general public and read the paper and listen to people talk, I don't hear that. So for every hour I get a positive thought in this room, I go out in the world and hear something just the opposite of everything the book is saying. So what could be more important to me than to have a place that where I could come to be reminded of the truth about myself? You know what I mean? That's why I listen to it over and over again, because I tell people something, I don't want to hear my thoughts. And if I'm working at home, I got the Course going in the background very softly. I don't want to listen to what my ego is telling me all the time. I don't want to hear what to be afraid of next and what might happen in the future, what happened to me in the past, who I got to watch out for, what I'm dissatisfied about, what I think I have a lack in that I need to try to fix. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the ego. The ego is the part of the mind, the Course says, it's always pointing out what you don't have, and then it turns around and then makes you not have it, and then it beats you up about doing the things it told you to do. It's like your ego will tell you to go cuss somebody out. You go cuss them out, and then your ego said, see that, you thought you were such a spiritual being, you a slug. The same voice that told me to attack would be the exact same voice that condemns me for doing it when I do it. That's what the course calls the ego. And when you start to realize it's a voice that you made up, and that you used to think was you, that's when the separation, the course says the only right use of separation is separation from your ego. Like, if you're going to use separation, then separate from thinking that you're your ego. Look at your ego as a learned response that you are used to following based on what you were taught and experienced in the past. It's nothing but like a program or like a software program that you got to delete. And every time you run that program, it's gonna say the same thing. You're not enough, you're not enough, you're not enough. And then after the computer, you go to a point, you go, let me uninstall this program. You just uninstall it. You get it off your computer. And if you would almost look at your mind like that, the course would make a lot more sense. First, it's pointing out the virus and the spyware. It's pointing out the programs that's doing you in. First, you didn't know the program was there. Like on a computer, you literally have hidden programs doing damage to your computer that you don't know about, but you're seeing the result. And then it said, well, let me find this program, this malicious, they call it a malicious software program. And then you go find the program, and then it says, well, you got a choice. When it finds it, you got a choice of quarantining it, fixing it, or deleting it. And that's exactly what the course is doing. You got malicious programs. I'm trying to tell you it's this malicious program that you don't know about that's what's creating your relationships. And forgiveness is nothing but recognizing that it is a program, but it's not you. So you're forgiving the program. You're releasing the program. You're letting go of the program, but you are not your program.
Do you ever remind yourself that it's the dream?
That's my favorite thing.
Because I was reviewing that again in that book, Disappearance of the Universe.
Yeah.
How they go through the steps of forgiveness, and I really liked.
Yeah.
Because I'd always had a little trouble before with how do you forgive, and I really liked that they said, you know, go, it's my dream. I'm the author of the dream. You're in my dream. And that I forgive you for what you did not do. In my dream, because it's my dream, I'm the author of my dream, of my illusion, I guess.
But that's the beauty of the book. The book only has one purpose, but it has a gazillion different approaches to it. Like I'm finalizing my website, and I got, you know, almost 100 classes on there so far that people will be able to listen to all of them if they subscribe to it, or buy single classes. And the guy was asking me, so I want you to, you know, give a little synopsis about what each class is about. And what I was going to tell him was, besides the fact that I wasn't going to go back and listen to 100 classes, it was like amazing to me that he didn't realize that was a lot to request. But beside that, I would run out of what the classes was about in about 5 synopsises, because the course is only about the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. It just takes a lot of different approaches, hoping that one of those approaches will be the one that will make you do it. Like for me, I forgive faster when I see it as a call for love. Okay, that might not get your juices going, but if you saw it as a dream, then you'd be more willing to do it. But all of those concepts are all coming from the course. You see what I mean? So you read the course so that you can find the approach that you are willing to do. And that's why I try to keep presenting so many different things in a class, so that maybe one of those things that it says will be the thing that will make you go, oh, okay, I got it. But the ego is looking for the answer. It's looking for, it tells you, you know, I want you to tell me one thing. I could tell you one thing. He says, but if I told you one thing, do you know how much discipline it would take for you to apply the same answer to every single problem that came up in your life? Could you imagine how much will that would take, that no matter what came up, you would take the same approach to solving it, and you would say it's the same thing? But if you did that, could you also imagine how much power you would be generating? It's like a laser beam. It's like one of the biggest breakthroughs with the course for me was when I stopped believing in different answers.
Yeah.
It's like if you want to make a breakthrough, stop believing in different answers. Don't one day say, oh, I had this problem, I got an answer for it. But you know what? This evening I got a financial problem. Could you tell me what the answer to that is? And next I got a relationship problem. Could you tell me what the answer is to that? Because then you're teaching yourself that there are different answers. And it's just one answer. It's just one problem. He says there's just one solution. You know, the problem is a grievance. The solution is a miracle, which he would call forgiveness, which is correct perception. My financial problem is an incorrect perception. My relationship problem is an incorrect perception. My health problem is an incorrect perception. My problem with my child is an incorrect perception. My problem with my car. What do you mean my problem with my car is an incorrect perception? If you're giving yourself conflict about it, then you're having an incorrect perception. The problem isn't your car. The problem is your perception of it. Cause and effect. It's like, I thought I had lost my $300 camera that I was totally in love with. And I immediately realized that as long as I was attached to that camera, I never was going to see it again. As long as I made my peace dependent on that camera coming back, I could pretty much be guaranteed that camera would not, because I've done this long enough to know these things. That the more attached that I am, the less things turn out the way I want them to. That'll be another lesson that you learn on the spiritual path. The more you are attached, the person I gotta have is usually the last one I get. The situation I gotta have, that's usually the last one that shows up. Why? Because you're deceiving yourself into believing that your happiness is in that situation, a person. And that's opposite to universal law. So the universe is not going to help you fool yourself. It's almost like if you got what you wanted, it would almost be like the universe was supporting you and deceiving yourself into believing that your happiness is outside of yourself.
And even if you do get it, because this just recently happened, Mary knows that that we were talking about this issue last week after the class, that something that I really wanted to have happen, that was a very important thing, that thinking that I would be happy when I get it. And I love the fact that, I mean, I don't love it in some ways, but this whole seek and do not find, because you think, oh, you get this thing, this amount of money, this contract, this meeting, this person, you get your goal and then you'll be happy. And then you're not, because then my ego starts looking for the next problem that it needs to solve.
Absolutely.
Next thing
absolutely
to worry about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Obstacle to overcome.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, it was funny. I absolutely. Myself, but it was kind of funny. I was relieved to get this interview thing booked. And then I noticed that I wasn't totally at peace. I had to go, gee, maybe my not being at peace had nothing to do with that.
Sort of like the person you were talking to on the phone that wanted the form. Sign. You know, it's the exact, and that's what I was saying about the camera. I went through everything, had two bags that I keep things in, and I turned them upside down, and I was looking, then I realized, and I said, okay, first of all, can this camera be replaced? Can you really get another camera just like this if you wanted another camera just like that? Well, yeah. In other words, I spent the rest of the afternoon working on making that camera being gone mean nothing and to have nothing to do with my peace. I stopped looking for the camera and started working on my perception of the camera being gone. Okay? Yeah, it's like I started working on peace, just like you did. It's like, okay, Earl, you know the formula. You know the formula. The formula is to back off, make it nothing as fast as you possibly can. However you can pull that off, make that camera being gone have nothing to do with your peace. And I finally did it. And you can tell when you do it, because when you do it, you'll feel a lightening in your chest. You actually feel your body go, you know, you may not be all the way there, but you'll definitely feel, okay, all right, it's gone. I'll get another one if I need to, da 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 da. Okay. Totally forgot it. Let me finish it. Totally forgot it, right? Then this morning, right before I got ready to come over here, I glanced down in the same bag that I had emptied twice. Laying there in plain sight was my camera. Now, I've had stuff like that happen before where I was attached to something and it came back. But it would always come back as a way to show me that this is a dream, that you have invisible teachers, and this is not what you've been taught it is. I remember the same thing happened once before, and the thing showed up on the front seat of my car. Not on the floor, not under, it was sitting right on the front seat. I glanced down in the bag I had emptied, and there was the camera. So it had a twofold thing. It came back when I released it, but it also showed me that this is an illusion. And when you, just like had it, Disappearance of the Universe, when he said the two masters showed up in his living room, and then they started talking to him, and in the course they talk about that, that your invisible teachers will make a physical appearance when they won't scare the hell out of you. But as long as it would scare the hell out of you to have somebody appear before you, they'll just give you their thoughts. And I'm seeing, so what's happening is very subtly the invisible is letting me know it's about to make an appearance by doing things that see, okay, did you freak out about the camera manifesting? Oh, okay, you might be able to handle something else a little bit more, you know, physical. I always tell, don't do it at 2 o'clock in the morning, all right? if you're gonna show up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, preferably during my course class, when everybody's in the room with me, you know. But then, bam, the camera was back. But I know that the camera was back because I detached myself from it, Debbie.
I've been working that process that you're talking about letting go of the attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And what I keep finding is that it's like I let it go. I think that I let it go, but it's like there's a tiny part of my mind that still hangs on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll creep back up.
Mm-hmm. I had that happen about the camera.
Yeah. And so It almost makes me more afraid because it's like I feel like I can never really get rid of it. I can kind of get rid of it, but it's like it's got some sort of root down in there that I never quite get.
Yeah, in other words, it's like I'm realizing that I'm more attached than I thought I was.
Yeah, that's probably it.
You see what I'm saying? That's what I realized about the camera. I didn't say I completely let go of my attachment.
Right.
But I let go of, you know what I'm saying? Because I just like that. I didn't want to deceive myself. You're like, oh, I let go of this, really, I have
it. I have this idea that I have to completely let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like my ego finds a way to increase my fear because I'm like, you have to completely let go of it. Throwing it back. And I'm like, but I'm never going to never gonna get it back.
Yeah. And then the purpose of that is to keep you in conflict.
Yeah.
And of course, this conflict is nothing but a form of separation, which keeps you unable to hear your guidance.
Does it tell me what to do?
You know, just what you heard us do. Keep on whether it's study or whether it's something you tell yourself. Make your purpose. Keep your purpose to let go of the attachment. Keep that purpose, and then let your imagination come up with as many ways as you can to let go of it. For me, the easiest way, well, it was to think of some way that I could replace that thing very easily, as well as keeping in mind that it was just a trick to make me lose my peace. That's what I always do. I tell myself the truth. I go, this is nothing but a trick to make me think I'm separate from God and to think I'm a body. Even if I don't believe it, even if I don't have no emotion behind it, it's a defense against the truth. It's just to make me forget that I'm really the holy son of God. And then after I say that, then I go into, okay, I get another one of these at Circuit City. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I got another camera I can use as a backup. You know, it's like whatever it takes. You know, if it's a person, I go, well, is this the only person in the world that can really give me a relationship or be kind to me? Or if I had the thing like last week with the guy with the website, it was like, okay, couldn't I get someone else to do my website? You know, if I had, to be a little bit more problem, I'd have to do that all over again. But could it not be done? Could I still get what I wanted done? It was, it's hard to say exactly.
No, you see
what I'm saying? But it's just about keeping the purpose uppermost. And I found that the purpose will actually dictate some things that you could do. And then suppose I couldn't have let go of my attachment, right? And I couldn't get to the point that I let go of my attachment. Well, then I just, at that point, I would just have to accept that the camera was gone and I don't like it.
All God would have you do, you can do.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, yeah, sometimes you can't pull it off. you give it your best shot, and then you then you have another chance, you know.
Something. This is where sometimes the ego comes in, as I go, now does that mean something about me as a spiritual being if I can't flip this?
That's what I'm saying. That's what exactly what I'm saying.
Fascinating how it goes, because if I couldn't have pulled off this thing that needed to happen with certain timing, very specific timing, I thought, if it doesn't happen, does it mean something about me that I'm less spiritual? I mean, because if I was really aligned with God, wouldn't it all work out? And it was interesting because I had to go back and go, well, no, God is not working on the level of the world. God's not worried about my timing of my appointment.
God is only concerned with your peace.
He doesn't care about our thoughts. He cares that we can think.
Yeah.
That we have a choice.
And then he'll give us the thoughts.
If we can choose another thought.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. And that kind of freaks people out when they say, well, you know, God doesn't care if you win a Golden Globe Award.
Yeah.
You know, I love when people thank God for winning awards. I roll in the eyes when I see that. You know, it's like, okay, God wanted you to win over everybody else that was running for the award, right?
Pretty much separation
period. A lot of separation going on. You know, I'm so special. Out of all the children of God, God wanted me to win this contest. You know what I'm saying? It's so funny. But it's like, but it's cool if you say, I thank God for my talents, and I thank God for my abilities, and I thank God for my creation. Now, what I do with my created self, that's another thing altogether. But my value has nothing to do with winning a contest or not winning a contest. My value has nothing to do with where I live and how much money I have and how I look and what I finish school or how much attention I get. You know, all those things are total ego judgments that people go by. Or if the truth is really working, then I'll get that raise. If the truth is really working, I'll get that physical healing. And if I don't get that physical healing, then I must not be a good truth student. And it's like, no, that's not it at all. At all. You're a good truth student if you can re-perceive the situation that you're in such a way you give yourself peace. That's when you're a good truth student. It's not about the form. That's not about the form and content. It's about the content, you know.
What's up enough for me lately is, do you know what IBM's slogan is?
What is it?
Think. You know, that's their whole slogan, IBM's. You know, and I think that, like, the computer tells us to think, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what this book is telling me is don't think.
Yeah, and you could qualify that with,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, don't think the way you learned.
Because it's my thinking. My thoughts are the one that's getting in trouble.
There you go.
All the time.
There you go.
So I said, don't think about it. It's like having a blank canvas. I'm the one that wants to write first.
There you go.
And I back off.
There you go.
See what the Holy Spirit would have me write first.
Mm-hmm.
See that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different type of seeing. It's more of an awareness than seeing.
Yeah.
What I've been thinking. Just don't think about it. Because
my
ego will run and make me think about the past. Why did that happen? Why did it doesn't matter?
Okay, now take this for example. I saw forgiveness as a call for love. You saw forgiveness as looking at it as a dream. You look at it as not thinking your thoughts. All of those came from the Course. That's what I'm saying. It's like it's like that appealed to you, and that was that, you know, and that's why I was sharing with people.
For me, so interesting.
Yeah.
Three ways.
And everybody here would have a different one. And then the challenge would be not to try to make anybody wrong.
Right.
Is that what you, is that the approach you want to take? How can I support you in using that approach? Where the average person always wants everybody to conform to the way they think of it. So most people spend their time trying to get you to change the way you think into the way they think.
That's been such a relief.
Yeah, but if you go, tell me what you've decided is the way Spirit is directing you, and I go, you know, Doug, I'm going to support that. Now we have a holy relationship. Because that's the way, because it's going to give us the same result. You're going to forgive, and I'm going to forgive. I want the result. I don't care about the way. I want the result. So when I'm with people, I'm always listening for how can I support you, how can I agree with you. And the average person is always looking for how can I differ in order to establish my individuality. It's like, how, I know you just said something. Y'all know those people that if you say up, they're going to say down. If you say white, they're going to say black. The minute you say what you think, they're going to say, well, don't you think you need to look at it another way? It's like they can't join with you, because if they join with you, it diminishes their own individuality. But if they keep differing with you, it establishes their individuality. So when you was an ego,
It keeps everything separate.
And that's what the ego is always doing. It's always trying to, like those men and women from Venus and men are from Mars. Those books are the kind of books that keep men and women from ever connecting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Every time you go to that, every time you go to that root, you know, unless you can go, yeah, I know there's some basic psychological emotional differences in a female ego versus some psychic emotional differences in a male ego in terms of form, but the ego is exactly like. There is no different ego. Everybody's ego wants to be separate. And we just come up with really interesting ways to pull it off. And every conscious being wants to join. So you can tell how conscious people are around you by how much they want to join with you as opposed to attack you and separate from you. And you don't have to act alike. You don't have to have the same beliefs or anything like that. You just have to both want peace with each other.
We talked about that last week, and I thought about that a few times going, Patty, do you want to join or do you want to separate? That was good. Yeah, that was the biggest thing I took from last week, is ask myself that question.
Beforehand, if possible.
Yes. You know. It was like, okay, we're going into something here. Do I want to join or do you want to separate? Yeah.
And then you sit down with, okay, how can I join? You know, and like I said, since we're learners, we have to make it okay if we don't pull stuff off all the time. We've got to be gentle with ourselves. Readiness is not mastery. Just because I'm ready to do it don't mean I can do it yet. So I'm not going to always pull off not getting mad. Like when I had that encounter, I got just as mad as the other person did. Now, I could have spent the rest of the day beating myself up. Oh, you've been studying the course all these years and you got upset. Da, 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 da. Or, okay, that was my call for love. Let me see if I can do it better this time. Let me see what's the approach that I need to take to try to make this different and to do this different. But be gentle. You got to be gentle with yourself. Because the more you read this book, especially at first, the more you're going to realize how screwed up you are. It's not a book. When you first read it, it doesn't make you feel like you're the greatest thing in the world. It's just the opposite. You realize, damn, everything you said about the ego, that's me. Am I the ego? I thought I was the child of God. But I think I'm the ego. No, you're identifying with your ego. And so you think that you're your ego. But that's going to switch. The longer you study it, the more you're going to get objective to your own ego. And you're going to start seeing, oh, that's my ego. And that's good. He says not that the ego is a separate entity. He just says that he talks about the ego as if it's a separate entity, so we won't take it so lightly.
Come on, Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I named my ego.
What's your ego's name?
Richard.
That's cool.
It's almost along the same line, and I kind of test on this because that's the thing I'm working on from 2 weeks ago. I can get the thoughts, but how do I get the emotion to go along with the thoughts? It's almost the same thing. Like
it is the same thing. It still is.
Yeah, it's almost like be willing to not worry about the emotion going along with it, but to focus on the action of the thought.
Okay.
You follow what I'm saying? Like, for instance, I'm mad at you, Keith, and I want to go off on you.
Okay.
And I can't really get the emotion right now, peace, because I'm really mad at you, right? But the truth in me says, don't attack you. Okay? I'm going for the truth. The truth says, well, for sure you don't attack him because you're attacking yourself.
Now, how do you defend that from your emotion?
Okay. It's much better to, in that term, at that time, not to act on the emotion and to act on the action. Because the once you act on the action, you prevented even greater explosions of anger and fear. See, if I went up and smacked you, that would produce even more of a problem than me not smacking you and repressing the emotion. Because the once I get back off of you and I do my work, I'm going to find the emotion is going to naturally start to dissipate, just like what happened with you. Like when she was mad, she went and did the study. Then the emotional reaction changed because she changed her mind. So at the very beginning, don't focus so much on feeling it as acting on it. And then once you act on it, then do whatever inner work you need to do to kind of let the feeling go later. Because what you want to do is not attack in that moment. Because it doesn't. One thing you're going to find, there's always a gift that comes to you through the person that you were going to attack that you forgive. Whether it's you feeling better about yourself. Yeah. Or it might be just you feeling better about yourself as a person and feeling like you're more on the path than you were. Or you may actually literally, like, you may literally have something really wonderful come to that. What I usually have is actually a gift come through the situation or person that was causing me the greatest pain, the ones I could practice this on them. I would actually get a gift to the point that I go, boy, I'm glad that I got that handle. Because that person ended up being a blessing for me. And at first I thought they was my worst enemy. And it'll come. But the main thing is, and then your emotion is your call for love. Your emotion is your call for love. Your emotion is your call for love. That anger is your call for love.
See, my prayer is I exchange my thoughts for whatever, for peace.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that's got the juice for you?
Yeah.
You want to find the thing, and you use the one that has juice for you until it doesn't have any juice. And then when it doesn't have any juice, get a new one. Like if you go, it's a call for love, it's a call for love, then it gets to the point you're going, no, it's just a call for love. But you notice there's no emotional energy behind it, then you can junk that thought. And then get it's a dream. It's a dream. Oh, okay, it's a dream. So you use that until the time you say it's a dream, you go, I don't feel nothing. Did nothing change? Then you get enough. It's full of. It's got 1,122 pages. You'll never run out in a lifetime. Thank you for sharing with me in the love offering. And thanks for everybody, talking and discussing. I love that in the Wednesday class that we get a chance to also share a lot of our personal thoughts.
Do you have a lot more people come on Thursday night or on Sunday? I never come on Thursdays.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
There's a lot more people on Thursday and Sunday, but trust me, with a Course in Miracles class, you never know. I've done this 20 years, and I've had, I can't tell you how many people tell me, boy, this class is really, really growing. You got to be in a bigger place. It's no pattern. The only pattern with the Course is that there is no pattern. And what I've learned is that he told me in the book that people are sent. And that's what I tell myself every class. Oh, okay, this is who was sent tonight. Yeah, this is what we did. Yeah, I kind of. If not, I would have shot myself years ago. I would have been a dead Course teacher. What happened? He committed suicide. It was something I said. Because if I judge myself the way the world judges success, I would shoot myself after 25 years of teaching. I would go, what's wrong with you, buddy? One of the things my brother told me, he was one of my greatest teachers before he made his transition, and I always think about it sometimes if I feel discouraged and feel like my ego's telling me that I'm not really progressing in what I'm trying to do. He says don't ever judge your progress by worldly values, because you're on a spiritual path. You judge you determine your progress by how much peace you have, how much self-control you have, how much you take responsibility, not by how much money you get or whether you sell 1 million books or whether your classes get bigger. It's because whenever you do that, you're right back in your ego, because only your ego would judge success by those standards. I got a phone call from Doug the other week that was a call of success. Because it was a call where he was expressing a lot of appreciation for me and what I've done here in the class. And it's moments like that that make it all worthwhile. Because, people assume that you know that you're touching their lives. But when someone lets you know that you're touching their life, it can be enough to motivate me for 10 more years, regardless of who's there. You see what I mean? So that... What's the way to judge success was in terms of how much love is coming back, how much gratitude you have for yourself or other people appreciating what you're doing. So you all being here and willing to remember with me is the most important thing in the world to me. And that's why I'm here for you. It's the same thing. Like I say, how will the world end? It'll end in joy. He's saying that the point that you're really happy, the world has ended for you. Because the world is where people are afraid and unhappy. And I went, oh, okay, that's deep. So every time I'm happy, the world is ended. Yeah, if you're happy, the world is ended for you. Because I'm telling you, talk to a few people, and you realize that they're in another world from you. Mm-hmm. That you're not in the same world they are in. The world has ended when you're in love and happiness.
And I find you will actually tell that something's wrong with you.
that we're not.
They're telling me that there's something wrong with me.
Yeah, because according to their perception of reality, it's not possible to be happy. Because they're literally in another world from you, in a world of perception from you. That when they look out through their eyes, they don't see love. They just see fear. So they literally don't see the world that you're talking about that's making you. I mean, it's not even a figure of speech. They literally don't see the world that you're in, Keith. They don't even believe, it's hard for me to believe that a group like this would even be coming together talking about what we're talking about, being the way we are, being a diverse group of people. To them, it's not even in their world.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It puts a whole new meaning to that term, I'm in the world but not of the world. And that's where I feel. I feel like I'm just watching something that doesn't touch me. It's like being in a space suit on the moon or something. It's like I'm walking around and listening to everybody complaining and bitch and moan about this, that, and the other. And I'm like, I had a year that there was not one real drama the entire year. And if that hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't even believe that that was possible, that I could live a year and not one real drama come up in my life that could really just take my peace away for real. And I realized I had lived through that year, and I went, damn, I remember when it was all day long, one thing after another, 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 one thing after another. And so what that showed me was I must have been creating it. I mean, that's the only thing that's changed is me. You know what I'm saying? So I realized, Earl, some kind of way, you must have been creating it. If all of this died away, now you're still in the world, right? Yeah. Your family's still your family, right? Yeah. Why are you having a totally different experience? Okay, who's been working on this? Me? Oh, there might be a connection. It was me all the time. It was me. I was the one that made those other years chaotic. And it was like, then the court said, we have a face of innocence. He said, a face of innocence is the one that's often wet with tears at the injustices that the world would do to somebody who would be kind and nice like you. I got one. He said, that's the one that crucifies us. He calls it the face of innocence. You know. So anyway, thanks for coming today. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock is the next class, and then 1 o'clock on Sunday. If you want copies of any classes, you can order them. And go check out the website. That at earlpurdy.com, you know, I've done a lot of work on it, and I'm going to make it very, very easy for people to get classes. You can just actually just click on the class and listen to it directly through your computer. You don't even have to go through worry about the downloading thing. You just click on it. It's like listening to it on your stereo or whatever. And so it was funny because I got my first 1-year subscription other day, which is like saved 60% over a person buying classes, because I got all the name 2006 and half of 2005 online, and it was from Greenwich, Connecticut. So what that showed me was I need to think bigger, because the people who might end up supporting it the most might be people that I don't even know.
That's what I'm looking at, and
they're at the artwork. Yeah, because you have to think that it's the people you know that's going to be the ones, but life kind of tells you usually they're the ones that's not the ones. You know what I'm saying? It's usually the people that you don't know that will actually do things for you, more so sometimes the people that you know. Yeah, so thank you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.